This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The attack in New Orleans, the attack in Las Vegas, separate events as of now. The FBI continues its investigation. I welcome my colleagues, Andrew McCarthy of the National Review Online and Thaddeus McCotter of American Greatness, to comment on what we know, what we don't know, and in general sense to understand that terror comes back to America after several months or years of being on a sabbatical in Europe. The terror attack in New Orleans is easier to frame because the perpetrator, now deceased Jabbar, insisted upon attaching an ISIS black flag to the back of his rented flatbed. Also, he's made a video that I've not seen that is said to associate him with ISIS. That isn't quite the same as signing up to ISIS or signing up to Al-Qaeda, but it is terror-related to drive a vehicle into human beings walking on a sidewalk. We saw recently an attack like that in Germany, I believe, during the Christmas season, echoing an attack that took place maybe a year ago or 2 years ago. So we see a pattern now about using vehicles against pedestrians. Very difficult to stop, except when you're lucky and have some barrier erected. There wasn't a barrier that could have stopped the perpetrator from the video I've seen, but it's early days, and I welcome Andy and Thaddeus to comment. Andy, you've written about these matters. I don't have any confirmation of any of this material other than that Jabbar is dead and his employment record, a deeply troubled person who'd lost his family and his daughters and was about to lose his home or house, I believe, was badly in debt and had been associated with the U.S. Army over the years. No special report of him being radicalized, and yet the conduct is consistent with radicalization by ISIS or Al-Qaeda. How should we regard this in terms of the national picture? Because terror prevention started with your prosecution in the 1990s, and here we are 3 decades later, Andy, and it looks the same. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John and Thaddeus, and Happy New Year, which seems like a grim story to say that in connection with, but I mean it sincerely. I don't really think we've made a lot of progress in 30 years, John, I have to say. You know, you had this attack yesterday, which even though there are complexities in the background of Jabbar, the person who was killed in the gunfire exchange with police officers after ramming those innocent people on Bourbon Street. You know, there are the complexities that you laid out, but it also is very clear from the get-go that this was a terrorist attack. It's always important and interesting to try to get to the bottom of why things happen. And that's why these complexities that you just cataloged are worth our consideration. But at the same time, you have to hope that your investigators and the government that's responsible for protecting national security can call something what it is when the evidence for what it is overwhelming. And I guess what's disturbing to me, having now seen this same routine happen again and again for 3 decades, is the FBI's first impulse was to say that this was not terrorism. And that's under circumstances where, as you just described, it was a tactic that was used that has become horrifically familiar to us, practiced by jihadists, by a guy who clearly was associating himself with Sunni terrorist organizations who are actually officially terrorist organizations under American law that the FBI is duty bound to enforce. So I think it's I do think you're right to suggest that it's one of these weird things that as we get more remote in time, and obviously this is something that just happened on New Year's Day in the wee hours, but it seems like the further we've gotten away from the event, the more hours that have passed, the less reliable our information seems to be. For example, once the FBI said it wasn't terrorism and then in its embarrassment had to walk that back, then I think they started to say too much and things that they shouldn't have said that hadn't been confirmed yet. One of those things was that this guy was clearly not acting alone, that he had co-conspirators. They seemed to home in on three men and a woman who were apparently depicted in some surveillance tape. And then lo and behold, when they did further investigation, it seems that those people were cleared, that they weren't actually involved. And when you take, if that's right, and if you take that out of the equation, I'm not saying he didn't have co-conspirators. I don't know if he did or he didn't. That's what an investigation's for. But I think there's not much, at least publicly known evidence for the proposition that this was a big conspiracy. It may have been a lone wolf attack.
Thaddeus, you have a comment or a question for Andy?
Well, it's kind of a comment and a question. Andy, I've long ago been worried about the role that the terrorist attacks would take would be akin to the anarchist movement of the early, late 19th, early 20th century. They had a phrase called the word and the deed. In short, they would issue the propaganda and it would be up to individual actors to determine how they wanted to attack society, be it a bomb, be it a gun, be it a knife. Are we starting to see that out of the disparate terrorist movements where they're putting the propaganda out and leaving it to adherents to choose the means by which they attack society?
Yeah, I think they've expressly done that. In fact, I think it's ISIS and Al-Qaeda doctrine that and I saw some of this in the Blind Sheikh case. One of the pieces of evidence that we put in was the Blind Sheikh's proclamation, because he was trying to be very careful not to be tied to any particular terrorist attack. He said, anybody who understands what our doctrine is knows what the right thing to do. There's no reason to come and ask me for permission to do this, permission to do that. Everybody knows what a good deed is and can go out and do it. He would say that kind of stuff all the time. And Al-Qaeda has and ISIS have taken it a step further and said, basically, it's the duty of Muslims around the world to follow our example and commit the same kind of acts. I think that this issue that you raise is even more pertinent to what we're dealing with today, because with respect to the anarchists, there wasn't any hesitation about calling them anarchists and recognizing that they were anarchists. And I think the problem that we have and we've had for decades in counterterrorism is the doctrine that precipitates these attacks, that catalyzes them, is a scripturally drawn doctrine. Now, it doesn't mean that it's the only Islam or that all Muslims follow it or that even a majority of Muslims follow it. But it is an authentic interpretation of Islam that is dominant in parts of the world. And all you have to do is look around at the shocking support that Hamas gets in the West to know that it's a lot more, that it's certainly not the fringe that Western progressives want to pose it as. The FBI's hesitation to say that something is terrorism is because they don't want to be perceived as saying that the doctrine, that an authentic Islamic doctrine causes violence. So the position they take is that Al-Qaeda and ISIS represent a false Islam, an inauthentic Islam. And if they can develop evidence that there's operational ties between someone who commits a terrorist attack and one of those organizations, then they have no hesitation to come out and say this is terrorism. But if it's just a Muslim and they haven't been able to tie the person directly to ISIS or Al-Qaeda, they are hesitant to say that a terrorist attack is a terrorist attack, even if it obviously is, because they don't want to be seen as condemning the doctrine.
Leibelsberger, that's the Las Vegas incident, now deceased, U.S. Army veteran of many years associated with the Special Forces. There's no indication at this point that he is flying a black flag or associating himself with ISIS. Parking a Tesla Cybertruck in front of the entrance of the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas looks like a political act, especially because the car was filled with explosives that I understand he could have set off remotely, but in fact they went off with him in the car and he's deceased. It does not look like it connects in any way to what we're talking about in New Orleans, and yet it's fog of war, Andy. We can't know. You just have to wait.
Yeah, you know, John, this is a tough one too, because if you're an investigator, and this again is why I say as an investigator, even though the public is clamoring for information, you don't want to be saying things publicly unless you can be confident that they're true. So this is always a sort of a fraught situation because people want to know. They want to, you know, they don't feel safe if they think the authorities are grappling for an answer. So here's what we know. These two events were fairly coterminous in the sense that I think the New Orleans event happened at about 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:15 in the morning, local time in New Orleans. And the second attack, I think, had happened about 8:30 in the morning Pacific time. So they're fairly close in time. And there's a couple of curious commonalities. Apparently, both guys are Army veterans. They were both at Fort Bragg, although you point out that the guy in Las Vegas was a special forces guy. I think Jabbar from New Orleans is an 82nd Airborne guy. And as I understand the way Fort Bragg is laid out, Fort Bragg is an enormous facility. It's probably like 251 square miles. It touches four counties. And the 82nd Airborne and Special Forces, as I understand it, couldn't be further apart on the physical facility. It's not clear that the both guys were there at the same time, or even if they were there at the same time, they'd had an opportunity to meet each other. As you point out, the Las Vegas guy does not, so far as we know, appear to be a jihadist. That seems to be, you know, self-evidently a politically a motivated attack, for as you laid it out. The one other commonality that's curious, they both used an app which I had never heard of until I read the accounts in the last 24 hours to rent the vehicles they rented. One guy rented the Tesla Cybertruck. The other guy rented a Ford 150 Lightning EV pickup truck. I don't know that the fact that they use the same app and maybe it's much more usual than I know. And I just, you know, it's a revelation to me, but that's a curious commonality. But on the substance of it, so far, there's no reason to think that these are coordinated attacks.
Andrew McCarthy,
but you'd keep looking.
Andrew McCarthy. Yes, always. And Andrew McCarthy, National Review Online. Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.